Hello and welcome back to From 350 to 80 podcast, where we slow down a little. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode with me. And today, since there was no race happening, it's not even race week, I thought about doing a different kind of episode for this time. Just this time. Because I'm honestly really bored and I thought that I might just take the chance while I'm kind of free and record an episode for you guys to listen to. So what I really wanted to talk about today was basically Crashgate and the whole history of Crashgate, because of how Felipe Massa is trying to pursue legal actions and he's trying to basically take the 2008 championship away from Lewis because of the Crashgate incident. And I posted a few TikToks like of how Massa is like being salty and whatnot. And I received a few comments of people asking of what Crashgate is. So today we're basically going to talk about Crashgate and the whole history behind Crashgate and the people involved and so on. So let's get into it. The first thing that we need to know is the man with the name of Flavio Briatore. I'm sorry if I'm butchering the name. He's an Italian businessman, so basically his name is also Italian, and it's hard for me to actually pronounce it well, so Flavio. I will call him Flavio or Briatore, probably just Flavio because it's easier for me to, like, say it, actually say the name, pronounce the name. So Flavio was a restaurant manager. He was also an insurance salesman in Italy, so he had, like, no relations with Formula One or any kind of motorsport. But since he was basically dealing with the insurance sales, he came into contact with Luciano Benetton, who was the co-founder, one of the co-founders of the Benetton clothing brand. So Flavio was said to be involved in some shady business because he basically had several fraud charges, and because of those fraud charges he was sentenced to prison for two times, and both of those two times he was almost sent to jail, but he was the charges were basically extinguished by amnesty. And what amnesty is, it's basically an official pardon. So he was excused. So he didn't need to go to prison, actually. He was still guilty, but he was excused. And one of those two times, the man was basically called sick and sent to the Virgin Islands. And while he was living in the Virgin Islands, he had, as I mentioned before, he had the ties with Luciano Benetton, one of the co-founders of the Benetton clothing brand. And basically, Luciano and Flavio formed this kind of deal that Flavio helped Luciano to expand the Benetton's basically whole market to Virgin Islands and also the USA. So as soon as Flavio started helping Luciano to expand his business throughout the whole world, Benetton had like almost 800 stores around the world, I think. But then people like in the USA started complaining that Benetton has like this huge monopoly in the business of clothing, basically of selling clothing, and the amount of stores I think was reduced to 200 in the USA. So because Flavio helped Luciano to expand his whole business, his whole Benetton business and the market of Benetton, the whole business was basically booming. Benetton were popular, they were earning a lot, huge sums of money. And basically, because Flavio helped Lucio, Lucio decided to actually give a percent of the earned money to Flavio. So they both were becoming rich because Luciano was one of the co-founders and Flavio helped him to develop the whole market for the clothing brand. So it's common sense that you would give some sort of a percent to your, let's say, right hand that like helped you to get to the point where you are. So basically then they had the genius idea of expanding the whole Benetton business to motorsport. And they were sponsoring a few teams in Formula One, but one of those teams were Benetton. So in 1999, Flavio was promoted by Luciano Benetton to manage the Benetton Formula One team. And basically, before Benetton were an actual F1 team, they were sponsoring a few of the existing F1 teams, as I said before, on the grid. And one of them was Tolman. So if any of you don't know what actually Tolman is, it was the team that Senna debuted with and achieved his first great result, which was P2 finish in the Monaco Grand Prix. So Grand Prix, not Grand Prix. So basically, it was a historical team because, I mean, Senna was a part of it. So, I mean, common sense. So basically, Benetton bought the Tolman team and renamed it after the clothing company. So it was called the Benetton Formula One team. And at first, Briatore, Flavio, was the commercial director of the team, but after the team manager was fired by Luciano, Flavio was promoted to managing director. In 1994, when Schumacher was racing with the team, and Flavio was said to have this ability to sniff out, like, quote-unquote, sniff out opportunities in the sport, because basically he sniffed out Michael Schumacher. Like, I don't know, like, the man, he was a genius of some sort, like a criminal but a genius, because he sniffed out Michael Schumacher. He decided to put him in the team in Benetton, and then Schumacher won his two championships with the team. So, I mean, nobody believed that a young Michael, like this young driver, this rookie, could be as good as he was. But Flavio, he believed in him. He basically, he invited him, Michael, to the team. And yeah, we were introduced to Michael Schumacher. But in 1994, the team Benetton was accused of cheating. Once again, Flavio, why are you always involved in stuff like this? But yeah, the team was accused of cheating and Schumacher was given a 2-race ban and the team were given fines. Shady business. Once again, shady business. Where's Flavio? There's shady business happening. After that, after some time moving on from the shady business, Flavio took the complete role of the team's manager. So he was basically promoted by Luciano once again to become the team manager. He was later replaced once again, because Renault decided to come into Formula One, like they decided to come back. And once they came back in 2001, Flavio was once again within the team, but now with Renault. And Renault bought the Benetton team and became, in 2001, became the Benetton Renault F1 team. And then in 2002, it became like just Renault F1 team. So once the Benetton F1 team became not Benetton Renault, but just Renault F1, basically Briatore returned as managing director and team principal. He basically replaced Rocco Benetton. And yeah, so Briatore, as I said, he had this ability, this talent to sniff out other talents. Like, he felt it. He knew. And his one of his greatest finds was Fernando Alonso. He met Fernando in his teenage years in 1999, and he was his manager. So as his manager, he secured Fernando a race drive at Minardi in 2001 and promoted him to test driver for Renault in 2002. And in 2003, Flavio actually fired Jenson Button and replaced him with Alonso. So, yeah, Jenson was replaced by Alonso, and basically there was like a huge drama because, like, oh my god, how can Flavio do that? Like, why did you do that, basically? Why replace a good driver with a rookie that we know nothing, like, about? And Flavio basically said, time will tell if I'm wrong. And he was right. He was right once again. Because with Alonso, Renault won both drivers and constructors championships in 2005 and in 2006. But after that, in 2007, Alonso turned his back on Flavio and signed a deal with McLaren. And in 2007, like, another scandal, which is like a topic of itself, was Spygate. And once again, Flavio and Renault were involved. Spygate was basically the whole incident, not incident, the dramatic spying incident with McLaren and Ferrari and Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton. But Flavio and Renault actually did the same thing, basically, but they were not punished for doing it. And even Ron Dennis said that, and I quote, "Here is a team that acquired an advantage illegally," end of quote. So basically he was calling out Renault because, I mean, yeah, Ron Dennis was salty himself for actually being caught for Spygate. And yeah, I mean, it's a story of itself. We're not gonna get into that, but like, yes, Fernando Alonso, he was also participating in Spygate. I mean, the boss, the driver, as they say, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So Fernando, and Flavio, they're kind of the same, like, they really are. And yeah, so basically, after the whole Spygate incident in 2007, Fernando Alonso left McLaren because, like, clearly it was not for him. Lewis was clearly better than Fernando was. So basically he left and he came back to Renault once again. So moving on to the actual Crashgate story. So it's 2008, it's the 15th round of the season, and it's the Singapore Formula One Grand Prix. And there was a huge title fight for the Drivers' Championship between Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa, and also Kimi Raikkonen. So Massa, in the race, in the actual race, took pole position in the final session with Hamilton, Raikkonen and Kubica, completing first two rows of the grid. And Massa was 6 tenths faster than Hamilton, and he was describing it as his best qualifying result of the season. Kovalainen managed a fifth position. Heidfeld, Vettel and Glock occupied the third and fourth rows of the grid, while the Williams of Rosberg and Nakajima completed the top 10. So basically, it was a night race. The race started, and after 10 laps, Massa had built up a lead of over 3 seconds to Hamilton, and Raikkonen was a further 7 seconds behind Hamilton. On lap 12, Alonso was the first driver who came into the pits. He switched his super soft tires for the soft compound tires and rejoined at the back of the field. 2 laps later, teammate Piquet lost control of his car and hit the wall at turn 17. So basically, this whole incident that Piquet lost control of his car, he was blaming his hard tires for the accident, which was completely, like, wrong and not true. So because of this accident, this resulted in the first safety car, and the 2 Red Bull cars and Rubens Barrichello managed to come into the pits before it was closed. After it was closed, Rosberg and Kubica were 2 drivers who didn't have enough fuel in their car, so basically they decided to come into the pits despite the pit lane being closed. Barrichello's Honda then had a mechanical failure and became the second retirement of the race. And after all the cars were behind the safety car, the pit lane was opened and nearly all of the drivers pitted. So since all of the drivers pitted, Fernando Alonso, who was the first one to pit, he was now leading, basically. And in the pits, Ferrari released Massa with the fuel hose still attached to the car, because, like, in the past, we had refueling, like, when the pit stops were done, the team would also refuel the car. And because the pit stop crew basically released Massa with the hose still attached to the car, it was deemed a unsafe release, and Massa was given a, I think, 10 second penalty. Wait, let me check my notes, actually. So Massa was actually given a drive-through penalty for an unsafe release from the pits. I don't know how much time he was given, but I think it might be 10 seconds because people like the FIA weren't playing with 5 seconds and so on. So yeah, he was given a drive-through penalty, while Rosberg and Kubica were given 10 second stop and go penalties for actually refueling when the pit lane was closed. So the Ferrari driver, Massa, served his penalty and rejoined the track in last place. So Kubica also came into the pits and dropped behind Massa and so on. So the race continued on like that, and Fisichella came in from second to make his only pit stop, moving Alonso and Rosberg into second and third, then truly led the race for 4 more laps before making his only stop and handing the lead to Alonso. So basically, at the end, the race was won by Alonso. Rosberg came in second, and Lewis came in third, and extending his lead in the Drivers' Championship. So after the race, Fernando Alonso said that this is going to be the most memorable moment in F1's history, and he basically thought that the team had a little bit of luck this time. Yeah, sure, Alonso, sure. So during the actual race, the Renault driver Nelson Piquet Jr. crashed on lap 14 at turn 17, which at the time he basically admitted that it was a simple mistake because of the hard tires that were put onto his car. And at the time, his teammate Fernando Alonso was the only driver to have pitted for fuel, and then he later went on to win the race. So it really looked innocent at that time, after the race, so nobody really batted an eye. But after Piquet Jr. left Renault in 2009, allegations surfaced that this crash had been deliberate to give an advantage to Alonso, because following an investigation by the FIA in which Piquet stated that he had been ordered by Renault team principal Flavio Briatore. Once again, where's Flavio? There's always shady business. No matter where he is, there's always something shady happening. So Flavio and engineer Pat Symonds basically ordered Piquet to stage the crash. So in this investigation with the FIA, Renault were charged with conspiracy and race fixing, and they were due to face the FIA World Motorsport Council in Paris. But initially, Renault and Briatore stated that they would take legal action against Piquet for making false allegations. So, like, they were trying to somehow make it look like Piquet is the one who's lying, and, like, look at us, we're the team. Like, how can you trust one driver and not the whole team? But Renault announced that they would not contest the charges and that Briatore and Symonds had left the team. So it was an easy way out, basically. So after Flavio left the team with the engineer Symonds, the FIA banned Briatore from any FIA-sanctioned events indefinitely. So basically, Formula One and any kind of motorsport that the FIA is involved in. The FIA also stated that it would not renew any super license granted to Flavio's managed drivers, effectively barring him from managing drivers who participate in any competition that is under the FIA's authority. So Flavio now had, like, no way of entering, like, not even, I guess he could enter to see the motorsport events, but he had no rights to actually, like, have a job in any motorsports or to even manage a driver, because the driver wouldn't get his super license, because, like, a driver without a super license, like, is not a driver. Later, Flavio tried to sue the FIA in French court to actually clear his name. And basically, the ban of Flavio was overturned and granted him $15,000 in compensation. So, yeah. This shady businessman, like, got a compensation for being shady. Like, he got a compensation for nothing, basically, but okay. All right, so now where does Felipe Massa actually come in this whole situation, this dramatic situation? So Massa's best chance to win a World Drivers' Championship came in 2008 when, while at Ferrari, he lost out to McLaren's Hamilton by a single point. Like, imagine that. A single point. But yeah, when the whole Crashgate actually happened, Hamilton went on to win the Drivers' Championship at the end of the season, and Massa was robbed of the championship. And quote-unquote, he said, everything that happened was a robbery, but nothing has happened in terms of the race. The result didn't change. This is not right. The robbery changed the championship. I lost by 1 point. End of quote. So, yeah. I mean, at that time, yes, I do understand. I really do understand, like, the frustration and everything of Massa. But Hamilton protested his innocence in 2009 by going on the offensive and actually addressing Massa's strong claims, quote-unquote. I think all we can say is that it was a tough season. Things happened, and there were lots of what-ifs throughout the season. We had quite a fair battle throughout, and I've always found him to be a fair driver, so I'm a bit surprised and shocked to hear him say that, to be honest. End of quote. And now, 15 years later, Massa is basically digging through old memories and old controversies, and he's like basically believing that at that time that costed him what could have been his only world title. So what he's saying now is, quote-unquote, I intend to study the situation, study what the laws say and the rules. We have to have an idea of what is possible to do. I would never go after it thinking financially. I would go after it thinking about justice. It's basically he's talking about the world championship title, that he would want to have the title because of justice and not, like, the financial part. And I mean, yeah, I do believe that, but also, I mean, why now? Why now? I don't understand that part. But anyways, he also said, quote unquote, I think that if you've been punished for something that wasn't your fault and it's the product of a robbery, a stolen race, justice has to be served. In fact, the right situation is to cancel the result of that race. It is the only justice that can be done in a case like this. End of quote. And I mean, okay, I do understand Massa. I really do understand. But as I said before, why now? And if you lost a title, a championship battle by one point, like, you could have made that 1 point up in, I don't know, some other races. Like, I really don't know if it's necessary to actually dig down in memories and, like, try and get this title back. Because what good is it for? And yes, at that time, Renault was also said to be banned from Formula One for 2 years. And as I said before, Flavio and the engineer, Pat Symonds, were also punished for this. And at that time, Massa tried to actually, like, cancel the results of the Singapore Grand Prix and, like, basically delete the whole race, like, it didn't actually happen and the points shouldn't have been counted. But the FIA, they didn't have enough, like, evidence to actually support Massa's claims and to change the result, because they felt that it would have been unfair to actually change the results. But Massa thinks that they are grounds to review things once again in the wake of recent comments from Ecclestone suggesting that he and the FIA were aware of the rules breach before the end of the 2008 season. So within the time when action could have been taken to alter the result. So basically now there are more evidence resurfacing from the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix. So that's why Massa is, like, trying to take legal action. But once again, once again, I don't know. I really don't know how to feel about this. And yes, the FIA president Max Mosley knew of this situation during the 2008 season. And quote unquote, he said, "We decided not to do anything for now. We wanted to protect the sport and save it from a huge scandal. That's why I used angelic tongues to persuade my former driver Nelson Piquet to keep calm for the time being." Yeah. Sure, Max Mosley, sure. Quote-unquote, back then there was a rule that a world championship classification after the FIA award ceremony at the end of the year was untouchable. So Hamilton was presented with the trophy and everything was fine. "We had enough information and time to investigate the matter. According to the statutes, we should have to cancel the race in Singapore under these conditions. That means it would never have happened for the championship standings, and then Felipe Massa would have become world championship and not Lewis Hamilton." End of quote. And as a final note, basically Massa was really devastated that after 15 years he actually found this out, that Max Mosley decided not to actually publish like the whole accident part that happened and decided not to like tarnish the name of the sport. And yeah, the last quote of Massa is, and I quote, "This is very sad to know the result of this race was supposed to be cancelled and I would have a title. In the end, I was the one who lost the most with this result, so we are going after it to understand all this. These are rules, and there are many things that, depending on the country, you cannot go back after 15 years to resolve a situation. But I intend to study this situation, study what the laws say and the rules. We have to have an idea of what is possible to do." End of quote. So, in the end, the FIA's own international sporting code does not allow protest after a race, and any right to request a review expires 14 calendar days after a competition and 4 days prior to the date of that year's FIA prize giving ceremony. So yeah, I don't think that Massa is going to be able to actually have that championship title of 2008, because if the sporting code says that it does not allow protest after a race, so I don't really think that it's possible, but we'll see what happens, because this is the information that we have so far. And if I see any new information, I'll be sure to actually do another podcast episode like this, because I had so much fun actually recording this episode and like digging through the whole history of Formula One, which like motorsport.com and Wikipedia and a lot of, oh, also wiki fandom, yeah, that it was so helpful for me, because I found some stuff out that I didn't even know before, like that Flavio was actually a manager to some of the drivers, like Mark Webber. And Mark Webber, Jarno Trulli, Nelson Piquet, and also Heikki Kovalainen. Like, okay, Flavio, like, the man was, like, he was a genius, like, a total genius, and it was so fun, like, researching this topic, because I knew about it, but, you know, when they say, like, if you try to teach somebody else about the topic that you need to learn, you learn it faster. So, yeah. And if you actually made it this far with me, I hope you heard something interesting, something new. I hope that this was informational. And yeah, I hope you had fun, the same as I did. And yeah, I think that this is it. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope I'll see you next time. I don't know when, but I'll try to be somewhat periodical with my uploads. But yeah, once again, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye!